Good morning. We are in John chapter 10 this morning. Next week, I hand off the baton to Steve Zeisler, who will pick it up in John chapter 11 for that absolutely fabulous chapter concerning Lazarus and his two sisters. You've got to come back for that. But we are in John chapter 10, which is just as good. It's a little bit different, but it's just as good as John chapter 11. First of all, I'd like to show you a photo, and this is of Joseph Merrick. And he was an Englishman who lived toward the end of the 19th century. And as you can see, he suffered from a horribly disfiguring disease. And so most people shied away from him or were very curious about him and wanted to look and to stare. He had a very difficult life, quite obviously. Just from looking at the picture, you can see that that was the case. On at least one occasion, he was severely beaten by his father. The only consistent work he found was that of a curiosity. He was the star of a freak show. They called him the Elephant Man. They said he was half a man and half an elephant. And so he was exploited for his appearance. His manager took him on a tour of the European continent, and in Belgium, he robbed him and he abandoned him. John Merrick, he was also known as Joseph Merrick, went by both names. His heart was unknown. He lived his life in the shadows. His plight was particularly excruciating, and yet, how many of us have been beaten, if not physically, then emotionally? How many of us have been exploited and taken advantage of? We're considered valuable only for our usefulness and nothing else. How many of us have been robbed, if only of our innocence? How many of us have felt abandoned, alone, in a coldly indifferent world? How many of us feel as if our hearts are essentially unknown, as if no one really knows what's going on inside? Is there anyone who knows our hearts? Is there anyone who knows our hearts and can therefore speak to our hearts? And if there is anyone, is it possible for us to hear that voice speaking to our hearts? In John 10, Jesus speaks. Now, as we look at this text, we are not going to take a straight path through it. Instead, we are going to get the bird's eye view in order to consider a contrast between the false shepherds and the good shepherd. That is the contrast that Jesus sets up in this great chapter. And so we're going to dive right into it from that perspective to understand how the false shepherds influence and how, on the other hand, we can be influenced by the good shepherd. If you are interested in the straight-through approach and the full version of John chapter 10, you can check out my written version, which, as always, is available a few days later in the foyer and also online. Always, I write up way more than I can preach, so if you want the full version of anything, you check out the thing online later or in the foyer, you get the director's cut, right? Okay, so let's first of all look at the false shepherds. And this is what Jesus says. Verse 1, John 10. Truly, truly, I say to you, he who does not enter the sheepfold by the door but climbs in by another way, that man is a thief and a robber. Verse 5. A stranger they will not follow, but they will flee from him, speaking of the sheep, for they do not know the voice of strangers. Verse 8. All who came before me are thieves and robbers, but the sheep did not listen to them. Verse 10. The thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy. Verse 12. He who is a hired hand and not a shepherd, who does not own the sheep, sees the wolf coming and leaves the sheep and flees, and the wolf snatches them and scatters them. Verse 20. Many of them who were listening to Jesus said, he has a demon and is insane. Why listen to him? Jesus says that these false shepherds are thieves and robbers. Who might they be? Well, in the immediate context of John chapter 10, if you look backwards at John 9 and really at the rest of John, he's talking about, on the first level, the Pharisees. And if you're with us last week, you heard in John chapter 9 how the Pharisees expelled this blind man from the synagogue because he was speaking the truth. Jesus had healed him. He spoke the truth to the Pharisees, and the Pharisees wanted nothing to do with this man, and they kicked him out of the synagogue. The Pharisees, then, in this context, are the thieves and the robbers. They are supposed to be caring for the sheep. They are the shepherds of the sheep in the synagogue, and here is one of their sheep. They're not caring for him. Instead, they're booting him from their midst. Jesus, however, also says that all who came before me are thieves and robbers. Who are these people? Well, these people are leaders or would-be leaders or false messiahs. Some would be revolutionaries who would foment revolution against Rome, which was the oppressing superpower of the day. Others would be those who were collaborating with Rome in order to stay in power themselves. They would cut deals with Rome. The revolutionaries and the collaborators, both of them are false shepherds. And these shepherds ostensibly care for the sheep. That's their calling. They are called to protect the sheep and feed the sheep and take care of them. They're supposed to bless the sheep, but instead of blessing the sheep, they profit from the sheep. They figure out how to exploit the sheep. In fact, Jesus says these false shepherds come to steal and kill and destroy the sheep, not to take care of them. He also talks about hired hands, those folks who look as if they are shepherds. They stand with the sheep. They shepherd the sheep for a while, but when the wolves come, when things get really tight, when their lives are at stake, they leave the sheep to the wolves. And the false shepherds then, in John chapter 10, say, "Don't listen to Jesus. He's deranged. He speaks with the voice of a demon. This is an evil voice. You should not listen to him. Listen instead to us." Today, who are the thieves and the robbers and the hired hands? Who are the false shepherds today? They are everywhere, and there are so many of them. Sad to say, sometimes the false shepherds are family members, mentors, and peers. And they exploit us. They figure out how to use us. They take advantage of us. Some of them do this in ignorance, some of them with malice. At best, they simply don't know our hearts. They don't care to know our hearts, and they don't know our hearts. They value us, perhaps, for our usefulness. They can look at us and see that we have certain attributes, we have certain things that can benefit them. They value us, perhaps, for our wealth or appearance or intelligence or talents. At worst, they know our hearts to the degree that they can manipulate our hearts. They figure out what makes us tick, and they motivate us in order to get us to do what they want. I'm so thankful in this light for Real Options, the Mountain View Clinic, and others like them that offer Real Options that speak with the voice of a true shepherd, because there are the voices of the false shepherds are so strong and so powerful. And the voices of the false shepherds say essentially this: abortion is the best option. Perhaps it's your only option. They are well-intentioned, perhaps, caring for women, perhaps, but they are misinformed, especially misinformed as it concerns life, as it concerns what God thinks about life. So we can be thankful for Real Options and Peg Young and others who are serving there. And then there's the culture at large, the culture, by the way, which we have contributed to, which promises you the abundant life with the next purchase, or distracts you from the things that really matter with unrelenting busyness and connectivity. And the culture at large makes you always feel as if you are missing out. Do you feel that way? Whatever it is that you have, you don't have enough of it, or you don't have the right thing, and you are always missing out. The false shepherds in our culture make you feel that way. In fact, the culture itself in this regard is a false shepherd and makes you feel as if you are missing out. Not, of course, that you are missing out on Jesus. And then there are the hired hands, the friends and the people who say they'll stand by us, perhaps the institutions that say they'll stand by us, and they're with us for a while, but when the going gets tough and when their lives are on the line, they bail. They turn and run farther when the fast bullets fly. And there are so many false shepherds in our world who say this: don't listen to Jesus. He's dead and buried and gone. You can't believe all of that ancient stuff. It has no meaning for us today. He might not even have existed. Don't listen to Jesus. Don't listen to the scriptures. That's what the false shepherds today will say. What's the effect of all of this? Well, Brent Curtis talks about the message of the arrows. The false shepherds deliver the message of the arrows. And they pierce our hearts. And he speaks of his own experience of growing up with a mother who really just couldn't cope with life. A mother, of course, who was supposed to shepherd her children, but this mother couldn't take care of her children because she couldn't cope with her own life. And he also writes of his experience of being pinned down on the playground one afternoon by a friend, a much larger friend, who would not let him go, and feeling as if somehow, if he weren't careful, he would always be in that place. Here's what he says. There were other arrows over the years that struck in that same deep place. Arrows that carried messages about ears that were too big, and a father who never called or wrote, my stepfather who was a cowboy, commenting to my mother that I was a town kid. Another stepfather who came and went and never stayed in touch. There was a girl I loved but couldn't love. Intimacy requires a heart that is released, and mine was pinned down with unknown fears and grief. And so I let her go. And a total confusion over what vocation I would pursue or even had an ability for. The arrows flew, and all seemed to strike close to that fearful place that said that I was alone in a coldly indifferent world. What do the false shepherds do? They kill, they steal, they destroy. They kill, they steal, they destroy your heart. They wound your heart. And the things you care about most end up getting buried really deep. Your real self ends up getting buried very deeply because it's all so painful. Here's what Frederick Buechner says. The original shimmering self gets buried so deep that most of us end up hardly living out of it at all. Does that feel like your experience? That shimmering self, that self that you used to think was something great and something that you had to offer, and there was some real you there that was supposed to be given to the world, and yet the false shepherds have shouted that down, and there's been so much pain and so much doubt that shimmering self ends up getting buried deeply. Jesus says that the false shepherds speak with the voice of strangers. They're strangers. Yet is that true? Far be it from me to disagree with Jesus, but it seems to me that the voice of the false shepherds is the voice that we hear most often. And so it becomes a familiar voice. It's the voice sometimes that we grow up with. So we begin believing these things about the world. We begin believing these things about ourselves. It is only, I think, when we hear another voice that we are able to recognize the voice of the strangers as, in fact, the voice of the strangers. And then, perhaps, only when we hear that other voice do we know that we must listen to that voice, just like the blind man who was healed by Jesus, who listened to another voice. Listen to the Good Shepherd. Verse 2. But he who enters by the door is the shepherd of the sheep. To him the gatekeeper opens. The sheep hear his voice, and he calls his own sheep by name and leads them out. When he has brought out all his own, he goes before them, and the sheep follow him, for they know his voice. Verse 7. So Jesus again said to them, truly, truly, I say to you, I am the door of the sheep. All who came before me are thieves and robbers, but the sheep did not listen to them. I am the door. If anyone enters by me, he will be saved and will go in and out and find pasture. I came that they may have life and may have it abundantly. Verse 10. Verse 11. I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. Verse 14. I am the good shepherd. I know my own and my own know me, just as the Father knows me and I know the Father. and I lay down my life for the sheep. Verse 17, for this reason the Father loves me, because I lay down my life, and I may take it up again. No one takes it from me, but I lay it down of my own accord. I have authority to lay it down, and I have authority to take it up again. This charge I have received from my Father. Verse 21, others said, these are not the words of one who is oppressed by a demon. Can a demon open the eyes of the blind? Verse 27, my sheep hear my voice, and I know them, and they follow me. I give them eternal life, and they will never perish, and no one will snatch them out of my hand. My Father, who has given them to me, is greater than all, and no one is able to snatch them out of the Father's hand. I and the Father are one. Jesus calls himself the shepherd, not only the shepherd, but the good shepherd, the beautiful shepherd, the one who is able to care for the sheep. And he says the sheep recognize his voice and therefore follow him wherever he leads. The blind man who was healed by Jesus stopped listening to the voice of the strangers, the voice of the Pharisees, and he started listening to the voice of Jesus. He recognized the voice of Jesus as the voice of the true shepherd. Jesus also says that he is the door of the sheep. This is another way of saying that he is the shepherd, the good shepherd, because the shepherd at night would lay his body down in front of the sheep pen in order to protect the sheep from the wolves. So what does the good shepherd do? He provides the sheep with protection. They are safe. They are secure. Not only that, but he leads them out into pastures so that they can feed, that they can be nourished, that they can thrive. So they have protection and they have pasture. Jesus says that the good shepherd gives life. Not only life, but gives abundant life. Life abundantly. Life overflowing. It's more than enough for the sheep, what they get from the good shepherd. He also says that nothing and no one can ever break the bond between the good shepherd and the sheep. And the good shepherd, of course, lays down his life for the sheep and then takes it up again. Jesus here is referring, of course, to his crucifixion and his resurrection. So you think about it, here is the good shepherd. What does he do? He cares for the sheep so much that he's willing to die for the sheep. He actually does, in fact, lay down his life for the sheep so that the wolves take him. But what good to the sheep is a dead shepherd? So Jesus rises again, of course, and is with us today. He dies and he rises again. He takes up his life again. And in John chapter 10, there are some people who are able to recognize the voice of Jesus as a different sort of a voice. They listen to him. They say, this can't be the voice of a demon. In contrast to the false shepherds, the good shepherd knows our hearts. He can see into our hearts and he knows our hearts. He's able to look beneath all of the surface attributes, all of the other attributes that people might value us for. Jesus, the Good Shepherd, is able to look beneath all of that. He looks beneath the wealth. He looks beneath the appearance. He looks beneath the intelligence. He looks beneath the talents. And perhaps we feel as if we are left to be alone in a coldly indifferent world. Yet Jesus knows our hearts, and he values our hearts. He values the things that matter most. He values our hearts. And valuing our hearts, what does he do? He has the strength to protect us. He protects our hearts. Now, is this true? If you are a follower of Jesus, do you really feel protected in this world? Aren't there a whole bunch of false shepherds out there still who are speaking strongly? Aren't there a whole bunch of wolves out there who are howling? Do you really feel protected in this evil, difficult world? What does the Apostle Paul say in Romans chapter 8? He says that we are considered sheep to be slaughtered. Well, wait a second. What about our good shepherd? Don't we have a good shepherd who protects us from being slaughtered? And yet, Paul says we are considered sheep to be slaughtered. Yes, but what else does he say? In all of these things in Romans 8, he says we are more than conquerors More than conquerors. What does that mean? That means that which is evil, that which is difficult, all of the false shepherds and all of the wolves, all of those things which would destroy us are actually, in the economy of God, what Jesus does as the good shepherd, all of those things are for our benefit. Because the good shepherd turns defeat into victory. And Paul also says that nothing can separate us from the love of God which is in Christ Jesus. That's exactly the same thing that Jesus says in John 10. So, we are protected. And that's what we want, right? We want protection. We want to survive. But we want more than that, don't we? We don't want simply to survive. We want to thrive. Your heart wants to feel alive. And the message of the arrows and all of the false shepherds and all of the howling wolves can kill and destroy your heart. And you want your heart to feel alive. And what does Jesus do? He gives us life, and that's what we want. We've seen that all along in the Gospel of John. Jesus gives us life, and we could want many things, but we could probably all add it up and sum it up and say what we want is life. And Jesus not only gives us life, he gives us abundant life. He gives us enough. He gives us more than enough. More than enough of what? More than enough of his love. And that's what makes a heart feel alive. Love is what makes a heart feel alive. Jesus quickens our hearts with his love. And we feast on the green pastures of his love. We go in and we go out and we find pasture. We find his love. Not only do we have abundant life, we have eternal life, Jesus says. This lasts forever. This whole concept of protection, the whole concept of plenty, the whole concept of really being alive, that lasts forever. So Brent Curtis had all of these false shepherds in his life. And what did it all add up to? A certain belief system. Beliefs form, images form, a system forms in your mind about what's true and what's not true, and all of it is all warped because of the false shepherds. And so in Brent Curtis's mind, he had to be the best. And that's how so many of us process all of the voices in our lives. What all of that means is that we have to be the best. Second best isn't good enough. We have to triumph over it all so that we are impervious to any sort of accusation. We have to be the best. And that's the way Brent Curtis processed life. There was going to be this series of lectures that he was going to be giving with his friend. And all of a sudden, he realized the possibility that his lectures would be the second best. And waves of shame came over him when he realized that he might only be the second best speaker. So, what does he do? He thought for a while, okay, I have to improve this talk, this first talk I'm doing. I have to make it better. So he thought about redoubling his efforts to improve his talk. Instead, he went for a walk. He went for a walk, and here's what happened. After not many minutes, I felt something begin to break up down inside, a feeling of loneliness and longing acknowledged. There was a release that brought tears. I sensed that Jesus was ministering to me in a quiet and tender way, in a place years distant and much deeper in my spirit than just feeling provoked by the events of that particular morning. A sensation of freedom and well-being rose up from that very place inside me that moments ago felt such agitation. Bringing what was happening back into my head, in order to put words to it, I can only say that it was as if Jesus were telling me, "I understand your ache, Brent. I know how you've wanted to be someone's hero. It's okay. Rest in my love." There were no words of admonishment or exhortations to try harder. I understood in some way for the first time that my sin really has been cleansed by Jesus and is no longer an issue between us. I knew in my heart, in a way perhaps I hadn't before, the depth of Jesus' love for me on the cross. I felt like I was home. That's the voice of the Good Shepherd speaking to the wounded heart of his sheep. He knows the heart of the sheep. He knows all about everything. And what does he do in this case? He leads the wounded sheep to feast on the green pastures of his love. Brent Curtis does not write about what happened with the lecture. What does the lecture really matter? Is it best? Is it second best? He doesn't care about that. Why even talk about that? Why even think about that when you're feasting on the green pastures of the love of Jesus? Now, in this chapter, the Pharisees who are opposing Jesus are not happy about much of anything. And they recognize that Jesus is making a veiled claim to be God, and they are really not happy about that. So they take up stones in order to stone him. Jesus comes back with this complicated argument based on the Psalms that really distracts them and gets them to drop the stones. And he's able to make one last appeal to them to believe, and he's also to buy himself some time so that he can escape. So he engineers a tactical retreat. Verse 40. He went away again across the Jordan to the place where John had been baptizing at first, and there he remained. And many came to him, and they said, John did no sign, but everything that John said about this man was true, and many believed in him there. So he goes across the Jordan, where many believed in him in the first place, and now the sheep come. The sheep are able to hear his voice, and they come to him. The sheep hear my voice, and I know them, and they follow me. So what do we do with John 10? Listen to the voice of the Good Shepherd who speaks to your heart. No one else speaks as he can to your heart. Listen to the voice of the Good Shepherd who speaks to your heart. Can you hear the voice? Can you hear it this morning? Can you hear the voice as we've listened to the words of Jesus in John 10? It's different from the voice of strangers. And that's one of the ways you can distinguish it. It is different. It speaks with purity. It speaks with love. It speaks with no false motives. It is not trying to exploit. It's the voice of the true shepherd. He speaks to your heart. He speaks to the shimmering self. The shimmering self, it's buried deeply, but it is still shimmering. It is still shimmering. It still has hope, and Jesus can speak to that part. Jesus speaks to the shimmering self and brings it to life. Can you hear the voice of Jesus as he speaks to your heart? And can you follow him as he leads you to feast on the green pastures of his love? The elephant man lived life in the shadows, his heart unknown. But what became known toward the end of his life is that he had a love for the theater. He wasn't able to go, of course. He didn't have the resources. He didn't have the money to go to the theater. And when he went out in public, of course, that was a spectacle. So he never went to the theater except, as far as we know, one time. He was able to go to the theater and to experience the theater in a private box concealed from public view. And what we know is that he was totally enthralled by the experience. And he spoke of it for weeks afterward to anyone who would listen. It was as if he had reliving the entire theater experience, that story that he observed. It was almost as if it was real to him and he was inhabiting it. Such was the experience that he had going to the theater for the first and only time. In 1980, a movie was made about Joseph Merrick's life. And there was an actress in real life who took an interest in him. As far as we know, they never met. She championed his cause, and perhaps she gave money to his cause, but they never actually met as far as we know. In the movie version, the movie has Joseph Merrick and the actress meeting. In fact, the actress pays a visit to Joseph Merrick, and they have this private little conversation. And she brings with her, the actress does, this gift. It's a gift. It's the copy of Romeo and Juliet. And the actress, when she goes into the room of the elephant man, she sees something different. She sees his heart. She is able to speak to the heart of this horribly disfigured man. And you see, my friends, the beautiful actress is the Good Shepherd, and the Elephant Man is you. Watch this.
Which reminds me, I brought you something else.
Oh.
Have you read it?
No. Oh, but I certainly shall. Ooh, Romeo and Juliet. Yes, I've heard of this. If I profane with my unworthiest hand this holy shrine, the gentle fine is this. Thy lips, two blushing pilgrims, ready stand to smooth that rough tuss with a tender kiss.
Good pilgrim, you do wrong your hand too much, which mannerly devotion shows in this. For saints have hands that pilgrims' hands do touch, and palm to palm is holy palmer's kiss.
Oh, then, dear saint, let lips do what hands do. They pray. Grant thou, let faith turn to despair.
Saints do not move, though grant for prayer's sake.
Then move not, while my prayer's effect I take. Thus from my lips, by thine my sin is purged. And then it says the kiss.
Then have my lips the sin that they have took.
Sin from thy lips? Oh, trespass sweetly urged. Give me my sin again.
Oh, Mr. Merrick, you're not an elephant man at all.
Mm-hmm.
No. You're Romeo.
Why don't we just close our eyes and sit with that image for a moment? Maybe let the shepherd speak to your heart. Lord Jesus, you are our good shepherd. There are so many other voices, the voices of the false shepherds. But this morning, we hear your voice speaking to us with pure and holy love, speaking to our hearts. You speak to our hearts, and you walk across the room, and you kiss us. You lay down your life for us, and you take it up again, and we are Romeo. Amen.